Moto Casino, American Social Casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends, with thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino, American Social Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
This is CBS Eye on the World. Here's John Batchelor.
Continuing with Professor Tyler Anbinder, his new book, Plentiful Country, The Great Potato Famine and the Making of Irish New York. The famine Irish arriving after the potato famine of 45, 46 to 50 are now in New York, and ambitious, saving money, the Emigrant Savings Bank tells the story of success and less than success, people climbing up the ladder of success from unskilled labor to professionals, and in between are business owners. And along comes the Civil War and the breakdown of order in the United States of America, which heretofore has been seen as nirvana. However, in New York, there is the Irish Brigade, the 69th, and a number of these famine Irish have joined it already. Timothy Carr is one name, and James Kavanaugh is another name. Professor, thank you very much for this. The 69th Regiment, it's a volunteer regiment. They join, they meet on weekends, but suddenly there's a war, and they're called to the front line. They're called to Washington. What made up the Irish Brigade? Why did the Irish participate in what appears to be a war, to existential war for a country they've just arrived in?
Well, so Irish immigrants initially joined the 69th Regiment of the New York State Militia, what today would be the equivalent to the National Guard. It was the kind of thing, as you mentioned, where you would, you know, spend maybe one weekend a month training, doing military training, which mostly was just kind of target shooting out in the park. Most of the Irish join organizations like that initially because they want military training, because they're hoping to be able to go back to Ireland and free Ireland from British rule. But here comes the Civil War in 1861, and now these militia units are called to Washington to defend the capital and then eventually fight the Civil War. And you might think, well, maybe these units wouldn't want to participate in a war like that. That was, seemed like a squabble between Americans. But the Irish who joined these militia units were, for the most part, enthusiastic supporters of the Union effort because they felt a debt to the United States. The United States had helped give them financial success and security, and so the Irish wanted to pay that back by fighting to sustain the country that had been so good to them so far, even though there had been, it's not that they were all welcomed with open arms, but still they felt a debt of gratitude that they wanted to repay. And so the 69th goes to Washington and ends up fighting in all the major battles in the Eastern theater of the Civil War. They're thrown into action immediately at Bull Run. They suffer the very first casualties. In fact, you mentioned the very first casualty, very first wounded soldier in the Battle of Bull Run supposedly is Timothy Carr, who is a day laborer in New York who joins the 69th Regiment and is struck down at the initial Battle of Bull Run in the summer of 1861.
Timothy Carr, day laborer. And then there's James Kavanaugh, 5'6" from Tipperary. Remember, because of Emigrant Savings Bank, we have all the records of where they were born, where they came from, what ship they took. He runs, when he first arrives in New York, 1851, he runs a grocery, and following the professor's reporting, thanks to the Emigrant Savings Bank test book, and then a liquor store on Cedar Street in Ward 1. However, he joins the 69th and becomes a captain, so that he's one of the senior commanders when it goes off to war. The story, again, is that 69th is thrown right into Bull Run, and then it's thrown into Malvern Hill, which was the failed campaign of the Union to win in 62. And there he is at Antietam, with the 69th in the middle of a fight that was, well, it was a horrendous battle. It was the worst day America had ever suffered on a battlefield. And General Winfield Scott rides up to Kavanaugh, who's leading a beleaguered and extremely reduced 69th. I think they were down to about 1,000 men at the time. And what does the general ask, and what does Captain Kavanaugh answer, Professor?
So this is at the most pivotal point at what you could say is the most pivotal battle of the entire Civil War, Antietam, where the Confederates have come into the North, into Maryland, and are threatening to overrun the Union forces led by General McClellan and perhaps end the war right there. And the 69th, known as the Fighting 69th, was at the center, at the very center of the battle lines. And as you said, they are very thinned out, just down to a couple of hundred, actually, from 1,000 where they started at the beginning of the day to just a couple of hundred men. And the general rides up to Kavanaugh and says, "How long do you think your men can hold this position?" And Kavanaugh says, "We can hold it until they kill the very last one of us." And a cheer goes up among the beleaguered men, and they do hold the position and mount a counteroffensive against Lee, push Lee back to the Potomac, and the North carries the day there.
You think that was enough, but no, they're at the Fredericksburg in December of 62. And the Union launches what would be, at this point, a completely self-destructive advance. The 69th is ordered in against the dug-in Confederates on Mary's Hill. And there is no way this can be successful. But Kavanaugh continues to lead them until he's shot in the hip. The fact that he didn't die at this point, I was certain he was dead, Professor. I was amazed that he survived this.
Right, he's shot. He's shot both in the hip and the shoulder. And in those days, getting a wound like that can often be fatal, if not from the blood loss, from the infections that one might get. But luckily, he's carted off the field by his men. He's treated by an Irish immigrant doctor who is part of the unit, and he manages to survive. But yes, that was a very dark day for the Union forces trying to move Robert E. Lee off of Marie's Heights, which, as you know, was an impossibility.
Yes, the fact that they were ordered to advance is flabbergasting and not good generalship. Now, what comes after the war? Mr. Kavanaugh never goes back into combat. He becomes part of the Invalid Corps, helping to recruit sort of like a militia at home from the wounded. The war ends, but there is no reward for the great army that has won. That I don't think pensions start until the 1890s. Is that right, Tyler?
Right, till the late 19th century. So, right, there's no pension for the Civil War soldiers for several decades. What happens to him, and this is a great illustration of kind of the ironies of serving in the Civil War, earning fame. So Kavanaugh becomes one of the most famous soldiers from New York, one of the most famous soldiers in the entire Union Army for his valiant stands at Antietam and at Fredericksburg, as you mentioned. And yet he goes back to New York and he becomes a carpenter after the war. He had run a grocery and a saloon before the war that he had kind of taken over from his wife's previous husband, and those didn't survive the war. He'd been a tailor before that, and he goes back to being a carpenter, and he goes back to that, tries becoming a builder, but doesn't succeed at that. So he's just a kind of lowly carpenter, you could say. And seeing this 25 years after the war, New York politicians feel bad for him. And so they find him a position in the customs house in Brooklyn, as a supervisor of those whose job it is to evaluate the value of the goods coming into the country and levy the tariffs on imports. And so he ends up with a civil service job towards the end of his life as a kind of payment of gratitude for what he had done to help keep the United States alive during the Civil War.
Was the Dr. William O'Meara, was he with Irish Brigade? Did he treat Kavanaugh, or is that a different story?
No, that's correct. That's the same one. So that Dr. Wright, who is also an Irish immigrant, treats Kavanaugh and some of the other wounded at Fredericksburg and at all the battles of the Irish Brigade. In fact, he's captured three times during the war because he stays on the battlefield after the Union has retreated to treat the Union wounded. And so he's captured three times during the war, but eventually is released and goes on and serves again.
And becomes successful after the war. He eventually becomes coroner for New York City. Remember, always this push to move up to the professionals at the top. And William O'Meara was certainly an example. There's also a wonderful example of a dance teacher who disguised his Irishness with his name, Professor Judson Sauce. And this gives us an opportunity to talk about prejudice. The prejudice was everywhere. You have advertisements illustrated in your book where it's no Irish need apply, or they say preferring French or English. That prejudice was based, as I follow your reporting, entirely on religion. Is that correct?
It's mostly religion, but there's even some belief that the Irish are a separate, quote-unquote, race, and as a race are inferior to the supposedly Anglo-Saxon race. But yes, most of it is due to the Irish immigrants' Catholicism, and there's a great prejudice against Catholics in 19th century America. So exactly, Judson Sauce, he goes by Judson because it doesn't sound very Irish, and he already has a not very sounding Irish surname, but he hides his Irishness and stops becoming a, he starts out in America as a tool maker and instead becomes a ballroom dance teacher and teaches ballroom dance in Manhattan for decades and becomes one of the most famous dance teachers in America.
The book is Plentiful Country, The Great Potato Famine and the Making of Irish New York. Tyler Anbinder is the author. I'm John Batchelor.
Moro Casino, America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Chances are, you've been to the doctor recently, and you probably handed over your insurance, your ID, and even your social security number. Your doctor is just one of many places that has your personal info, and if any of them accidentally expose your details, you could be at risk for identity theft. LifeLock monitors millions of data points a second. If you become a victim, they'll fix it, guaranteed, or your money back. Save up to 40% your first year. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK and use promo code IHEART or go to LifeLock.com/iHeart for 40% off. Terms apply.